Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to another episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I am so excited to be chatting with you today because I am here with guest expert Marcy Nevin. And Marcy is a strength and nutrition coach who is going to tell us all the things today. Marcy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole. I'm so excited to be here. I'm glad that we were able to find a time to make it work.
I know. We were just talking about how we have both mutually followed one another for quite some time now, and we've never actually had a real conversation. So we're both chomping at the bit to continue discussion.
Long overdue, for sure.
Marcy, we have a get to know you question, little icebreaker that we ask all of our guests. That is, if you had an online dating profile, what would it say?
It would say, I'm going for a walk. That is what you can usually find me doing. If I'm not working or lifting, I am out walking, whether it's, you know, in nature. I just bought a walking pad. I know those are all of the rage right now, and I feel like I'm very late to the party, but best investment I have made in my health, and I don't know how long. It is incredible.
Okay, so tell me how you're using your walking pad, because I was gifted one. Well, I asked for it and I purchased it myself, but I was gifted one, in quotes, by my husband, and I love it also. Mm-hmm. But what are you finding is a great way to squeeze in some extra steps throughout your day on the walking pad?
Yeah, great question. I know before we started recording, we were talking about the weather right now. So it was 33 degrees this morning, which I was still outside. Like, it does feel good once you get out there. It's a little bit refreshing, but you know, I came back in and I had a meeting to be on at 8 o'clock. So hopped on the walking pad when I was on that Zoom call. I will say I live in a one bedroom apartment. It's very small, so I don't have a lot of room. So basically where I have it set up right now is in my like living area. So there's a big counter that separates the living area and the kitchen. It's basically my kitchen counter. So I have it under there. And it's not, I don't have a desk attachment. So my counter is too low and it's a little bit too far away to actually be doing work. So at this point, I've just been using it on Zoom calls where I don't have to be, I don't want to say present, but where I'm not like having to type at the same time or, you know, like lead a call. So more just like passive listening. And then if I want to, you know, watch like a presentation or a YouTube video, it's kind of like the multitasking type of situation. And then the other night I had gone out to dinner with a friend, came home, was a little bit short on steps. So I hopped on the walking pad for 10 minutes before I went to bed and finished it off. And it was great. Yeah. So I am loving it so far. What about you?
I love that. I do the same thing for Zoom calls. So I don't hop on the walking pad for coaching calls. I don't want to be bouncing. I don't want to feel as though my attention's diverted because I want that client to feel completely like they are the star of the show. If I'm on a Zoom call, however, where I can like have my camera off or I just feel like I'm in the background listening, love to hop on the walking pad. Mm-hmm. I also have a desk that rises so it can be like walking pad height, which is beautiful. And so if I'm doing just like mindless creating something in Canva for content or responding to emails, sometimes I'll stroll on there at like the slowest speed ever, just because the bouncing and the reading, it gets to me if I'm going like super fast. But I tell clients all the time, it doesn't have to be fast. Like anything is greater than just sitting, right?
Absolutely. And I feel so much better, more energy, all of that. So I will say what I've noticed in the, you know, less than week that I've been using it, is it's forcing me to be a little bit more present. So if I am on a Zoom call, whether it's like a business coaching call or something else, sometimes I can start multitasking, like, oh, let me check my email. Let me respond to this text message. And then I'm, you know, missing out on some of the information. So I feel like If I have the computer far enough away from me and I'm also not attached to my phone, then it forces me to be more present, engaged, and really take in the information. So yeah, we'll see how it goes moving forward, but loving it.
Yeah, me too. Shameless plug for the walking pad. We are not sponsored, but if you're looking,
please. I actually got mine. I got mine from Walmart. A lot of people get it off of Amazon, but I found one on Walmart that was so, it was like $150, and yeah, it's good. So, and still came with free shipping, 2-day delivery. So got here really quickly.
Amazing. I feel like there's so many places you can get them now because they are all the rage. So yeah, find what works for you.
Well, good stuff.
Marcy, I'm really curious. I don't actually know the answer to this question. Why health and fitness? Like, why did you initially get interested in helping other individuals live healthy lives?
Well, because I always say this, I feel like a lot of coaches get into the health and fitness space because at one time they were overweight or they were unhappy with their own body. And that was definitely the case for me. So I'm going to be 40 in January. Cannot believe it, but I have been, you know, doing this now essentially since I was 12 years old. That is really when I started to become more aware of how my body looked. And I will admit, I was self-conscious about it. I was noticing that as I was getting older and starting to mature a little bit, I was putting on weight. I looked different than my friends who were all tall and thin. I was kind of short and stout, and it really bothered me. So I started exercising in my parents' living room. And I'm really dating myself to Kathy Smith VHS tapes. That was where I got my start. And then, and to this day, I don't remember how I got the money to pay for it, but there was something, an infomercial called The Firm. So it was these like two little plastic boxes that you could buy, and then you had to use your own dumbbells or, you know, like a small barbell, whatever. And it was essentially strength training. Like, these women in the infomercials were jacked. And that was like really my first, I guess, foray into fitness, where I was like, I want to be lean and I want to be muscular. Like, I wanted to look like those women. I didn't want to look like the kind of, you know, wavy Kathy Smith that I was seeing more on like the aerobics VHSs. So yeah, I kind of started doing the strength training thing at between 10 and 12. I don't remember exactly. And then I was using Taibo and like, you know, kickboxing workouts, all that, just from home, thinking that that was going to help me to lose the weight. Little did I know it was really my nutrition. So then finally I started to ask my mom for diet advice. Definitely the wrong solution, because she was still very, I think, caught up in diet culture. And I always say, like, you know, when you know better, you do better. We're all doing the best we can based on our own level of awareness. And at that time in her life, like, she didn't have any idea, you know, what proper nutrition really was. So I was getting the eat low fat, cut out sugar, you know, all that type of advice. We went on the cabbage soup diet together. We went on Weight Watchers together. And it's funny, also offline, we were talking about Weight Watchers and how so many past clients are traumatized by it. I actually had a really good experience with Weight Watchers. I used it temporarily going into my freshman year of high school, and I probably lost 10 pounds. So it's almost like macro tracking, you know, counting the points. But I think that there was a lot to still be learned that I didn't really realize at the point or at that time. But yeah, lost the weight and then really got even more into fitness after that. So started strength train at the gym, you know, was reading all the fitness magazines, that type of thing. So I got bit by the bug very early, and it was really empowering to see that I could improve my confidence, change my physique through nutrition, strength training, you know, some cardio, all of that. And I don't know if we're going to get into this, but I went off to college and things got a little dicey at that point. And not for any fault of my own. I, again, was following the advice in the fitness magazines, which at that point it was like Muscle and Fitness, Hers, Oxygen. And what I didn't know at the time was I was following, essentially, it was like a competition prep diet and workout protocol. Right. So I was just doing what I saw, and I lost a lot of weight, but also became very obsessive in my behavior. So that was kind of an issue. Did get some support towards the end of college to kind of deal with that. And then at that point, I got my personal training certification, not thinking that it was something I was going to want to do for a career, but like, oh, it's a fallback type of thing. So I'll do it while I'm in school. If I get married and have kids one day and I don't want to work full time, I can be a personal trainer on the side. What I really wanted to do and what I went to school for was journalism. So I thought that I wanted to write for a nutrition fitness magazine. And then realized as I was going through the program, like, nope, not for me. So I went into outside sales. And then long story short, got fired from my second sales job. I was like, oh, well, I need to figure out what I'm going to do next. And in the meantime, I used that personal training certification, went to a small local gym in my town and started training clients. And 12 years later, I was still doing it. And then the pandemic happened and, you know, gym shut down overnight and I was forced to go fully online. So that's kind of like my story. But essentially it was, yes, rooted from my own insecurities with my body.
I'm really curious. So you started, like you mentioned, young with exercise, but also, you know, seeking out some diet advice. Do you think looking back, there was anything detrimental about starting that young? Like, did that play into your disordered eating that you experienced later on in college? Or do you think it was mostly beneficial for you to learn and kind of seek out that education early on?
Yeah, no, great question. I do think it was beneficial because it created awareness. And when I was doing the Weight Watchers, you know, kind of the beauty of it is that no foods are off limits. I know that they have made a lot of changes since then. So at that point, the focus was really on fiber. Like the more fiber a food had, the lower the points. But at the same time, I vividly remember eating Taco Bell and In-N-Out Burger. I was like, well, it fit my points for the day. But also, it takes away a lot of points for the day. So now you are not getting, you know, more of the nutrient dense food. So it wasn't educating me. And let me back up. The joke in our family is like, my mom went through the program. I'm the one that lost the weight. So she was essentially just telling me how to track the food and like how to calculate the points. But I didn't have any education around like, what is a protein? What is, you know, what's more nutrient dense foods? How should you be building a balanced meal? It was just like, does it fit the points? Yes. Okay, we're good to go. The other thing that I ate, like it was going out of style, my favorite food in the world is fat-free frozen yogurt. So I would go and I would have like a frozen yogurt the size of my head with chocolate sprinkles on it. And it fit the points. But again, I'm not getting any protein. I'm not getting any fiber, like no nutrient value to those food choices. So I don't think it created like a disordered relationship with food by any means. If anything, it was empowering to know like, oh, I can eat in this way and still lose weight. But it didn't give me enough knowledge moving forward. So when I went into high school, how old are you, Nicole?
35.
Okay. So we're like similar in age. Do you remember the book Body for Life by Bill Phillips?
No, maybe, although no. I'm a visual learner. So maybe if I looked up the cover, it might ring a bell.
Okay. So that was kind of like the first foray into clean eating, where you're eating, you know, 5 or 6 small meals per day. And then one day on the weekend, you can have the cheat meal and eat whatever you want. I mean, that looking back was disordered. I did follow that program for a period of time. So it kind of started me on the path of like, yeah, clean eating, making sure that meals were protein, carbohydrate, veggie, all of that, more structured strength training, interval training. And then when I went to college, that's when I was like really following the fitness magazines. And that's what led to the disordered eating, not necessarily what I was doing, you know, previously. So, and I think for me, what led to the disordered eating was I saw the results that I was getting so rapidly. And it was like this sense of control, like, oh my gosh, when I was in middle school, I was crying in the dressing room of Wet Seal because I couldn't fit into the largest size of clothes. And now here I am being able to wear a 00. Like, that was amazing to me. And so I just clung very tightly to those behaviors, but also, you know, just what they were saying about the clean food and it was just like labeling things as good and bad, essentially. So I became afraid of food. Right.
I can definitely relate to that. So yeah. Recovering from that disordered eating in college, what did you have to do? Like, it sounds like you were very active and it sounds like you were very calorie and at that point, nutrient aware. Did you stop track? It sounds like maybe you had to remove some food morality.
So I did. And it's interesting because even in college, like I never tracked my food. So I wasn't counting calories. I was literally just going off of this food is good, this food is bad. And so, and then following the diets in those magazines. So it's like, okay, breakfast is going to be egg beaters. And maybe if you're lucky, a half a cup of oatmeal with some protein powder. And then everything else was protein and veggie. I was curbing my cravings with, like, I chewed 2 packs of sugar-free gum a day. Protein bars, you know, Diet Coke, coffee with sugar-free syrup in it. Like, I mean, I was using all the spray butter in the world, sugar-free syrups, like that type of thing. So yeah, like just that mentality was not healthy by any means. And really what tricked, because one of my favorite sayings is you can't read the label when you're inside the jar. And I was so far in that jar that I did not see that I had a problem. Right. And like, this is just, you know, I'm the healthy one. Like, you guys are the ones, you know, eating pizza and doing all that, you know, kind of like judging people from afar. So yeah, I thought that I was being healthy when really, you know, I was not. So I was in a sorority, I think it was either my sophomore or no, junior year, I think. And I started to notice that my friends were not inviting me places. And I was like, what's going on here? And I had no idea. So finally, one of them essentially staged an intervention and said, listen, we notice this behavior in you and it actually makes us feel uncomfortable. So she was kind of pointing out what those behaviors were. And it was a huge wake up call for me because, I mean, at that point, like I didn't want to not have friends and, you know, be the one who was ostracized in the sorority. So it did force me to seek out the campus nutritionist. So, you know, we started having conversations about bringing in, you know, more carbohydrates, not fearing food. And I was able to do it and I did start to put on weight. So once I finally graduated, I was up to a healthy weight, definitely had started to improve my relationship with food. And then when I graduated, I met a bodybuilder at the gym in my hometown. And he's the one who, you know, put me on more of like a bodybuilding type meal plan where I was eating more carbs and all that. So I think that too helped. And then I hired like my first real coach when I was 24, 25. And he's the one who more introduced me to like the flexible dieting. So I think that's really what solidified that there are no good foods, there are no bad foods type of situation.
So it was really an evolution. I mean,
it was an evolution. Absolutely. Yeah.
There were lots of players. Shout out to the friend who felt, you know, that she could, it sounds like she did it in a very kind and gentle way, but she could bring to your attention. They were worried for your health and the campus nutritionist, the bodybuilder at your gym, the coach that you hired. There were so many influential people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm definitely grateful for that because who knows where I would be at this point.
Right. Same. I'm in a very similar situation. Marcy, you recently shared a post talking about 5 major reasons that people struggle to see fat loss results, even when they're working their butt off. Like they're trying, they feel like they're putting in the effort. Can you share some of those with us? Because I'd love to dive deeper into a few of them. What are some of the barriers that hold people back from seeing fat loss results, even when it feels like they're doing all the things?
Oh, I think one of the biggest, Nicole, is, and kind of going back to what I was saying, the clean eating, the healthy eating. So believing that if they cut out all of their favorite foods, which are going to be more calorie dense, what's the hyper palatable indulgent. So the donuts, the pizza, the ice cream, the cookies, right, that they're going to lose weight. And so what do they switch it for? Salmon, olive oil, nuts, nut butters, like, yes, all of these healthy, nutrient dense foods, but ones that are actually very high in calories and, you know, not that filling necessarily. So if we are looking to lose weight, you know, we want to make sure that we're eating enough protein, but that we are also in a calorie deficit. And one of the best ways to ensure that you're in the calorie deficit, but also managing hunger is to, again, eat more protein, but also higher volume, more filling foods. So that's going to be, you know, your fruits, your veggies, complex carbs that are not going to be super calorie dense. But if you are pouring olive oil on everything or even eating avocados, like they're going out of style, like those calories are going to add up very quickly, but also they're not filling. So I feel like what happens is people don't realize how much they're taking in because they don't necessarily feel full, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then they're thinking kind of like, well, it's healthy. So essentially those calories don't even count.
Yes. I'm sure you've heard this too, where potentially a client is struggling with seeing fat loss results. And when we try to figure out, hey, what's the barrier here? What's going on? They say something like, I eat so healthy. I just don't get it. And I think that oftentimes we maybe confuse eating healthy with being synonymous with a fat loss friendly diet, when in reality, they're two very different things. There is overlap for sure, but they are not synonymous.
Exactly. And I always say like, yes, absolutely eat those healthy foods. And I even hate to label it as, you know, healthy, not healthy, clean, not clean, you know, whatever the case may be, more so nutrient dense, like more nutrient dense, less nutrient dense, more calorie dense, less calorie dense, and just making sure that, yeah, like the foods that you were eating are healthy. They do have a lot of nutrients, fiber, protein, vitamins, minerals, all of that. But that certain ones can definitely pack a calorie punch. So just making sure that you are, if fat loss is the goal, including more of the ones that are going to be less calorie dense, but also very filling. And it's interesting because I went out to dinner last week with a former client of all people, and I do have to eat pretty strictly, for lack of a better word, because I have some autoimmune diseases. So I don't eat gluten. I don't eat dairy, which means when I go out to eat, like a lot of the foods on the menu are higher in calorie. So I chose this option and it was delicious. It was like the paleo bowl. So a piece of salmon, Brussels sprouts, goat cheese, what else was on there? Olives, like, and it came just like glistening, right? The veggies, the salmon, and it was delicious. But in my post, I said, like, this looks like a healthy meal. It's probably the healthiest thing on the menu. But I'm sure it was well over 1,000 calories just because, like, the oil that it was cooked in, you know, the cheese, the olives. I think there was avocado on there as well. So, yeah, healthy foods, but very calorie dense for sure.
So regardless of whether or not we're eating something that is, quote, healthy or eating something nutrient dense or maybe just something that's a little bit more pleasure focused, ice cream, donuts, the things you mentioned, portion sizes, and making sure that we're honoring hunger and fullness cues still matters.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that not everyone is going to want to track macros, but I do believe at least in the beginning of your fat loss journey, it can be a very valuable experience because you are learning about portion sizes and you are creating that awareness around what foods are more calorie dense. So nothing is more sad than weighing out a serving of peanut butter or nut butter, whatever it is, on a food scale. And you're like, oh, I was way over underestimating.
So you know? True. Or salad dressing or coffee creamer. And you're like, this is 2 tablespoons. And then you're like, oh,
cereal. No, it's like, I still do track my food. Like I'm in a pretty, I guess, rigorous phase of my process right now. And yeah, I'm using this non-dairy creamer called Nut Pods. And when I weigh it out, I'm like, oh, that is sad. 1 tablespoon is not a lot. Yeah.
So that is one big reason is we convolute eating well or eating healthfully with the same thing as, oh, this is supportive of my fat loss goal. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other reasons that we struggle to see fat loss?
Well, since I was just talking about tracking, I guess I will discuss for those who are tracking is measuring by weight, no, volume, excuse me, instead of weight. So for whatever reason, a lot of people start to get lazy after a little while. And I don't know why this is, but they falsely assume that it's going to take less time to pull out a measuring cup, a spoon, than it is to put something on a food scale. And it is also very eye-opening. My favorite example is oatmeal. If you were to, like, if you look at a package of oatmeal, a typical serving size is 1/2 cup. Or 40 grams. If you were to like measure out 1/2 cup in an actual measuring cup of oatmeal, level it off, and then weigh that, It's typically closer to, I would say, between 55 and 60 grams, not 40 grams. And when we're talking about a food that is a little more calorie dense, like oatmeal, I mean, this is not spinach leaves, that can be a difference of 75 calories. So in isolation, maybe not that big of a deal, but if you are doing that over the course of the day with every meal or with every food, especially things like olive oil, peanut butter, coffee creamer, those calories are going to add up. And then if you're also multiplying it over the week, no, you're at maintenance, if not a small surplus. So now people are like, oh, I'm putting in all this work tracking. Tracking doesn't work for me. It's like, no, you didn't work the process. So again, I know that doesn't apply to everybody, but for anyone who is listening who has tried macro tracking and felt like it didn't work, you have to really get honest with yourself and say, did I start by using the food scale? And then over time, I started to get a little bit loose with it and I was eyeballing portions. I was using the measuring cups and spoons. Like that can make a big difference for sure.
I think that is a helpful acknowledgement for people who are tracking, because it is super frustrating to feel like you're doing everything right. And even let's say your tracking app says, oh, hey, yeah, you ate the amount of calories that we are calculating you need to eat in order to be in a caloric deficit and to see fat loss. And yet you're not seeing results, right? Sometimes this happens. And then you look at, was my body broken? Like what's going on? Is my metabolism ruined because I'm doing the thing and this number is not actually translating to the results that I want to see? And that speaks to, you know, that calorie counting isn't 100% accurate. Just like if we're weighing by volume versus weight, that can sometimes bring some inaccuracies to our logging. It's not that we are the problem. It's that we're getting more calories than we think we are by one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. And very rarely are you broken. That's not the case. Unfortunately, I mean, it's an easy out, right? Just to like point it, you know, point the finger at your body. But no, it's typically your behavior, unfortunately.
Yeah. And some of that might just be like a lack of understanding. I mean, a lot of people probably think they're going above and beyond when they weigh out their oatmeal with a measuring cup. So this is just, yeah, awareness is key.
Awareness is the first step with everything that you are trying to change in life, no matter what it is.
Tell us more. We've got 2 out of 5. What are the others?
Okay. So the others would be, and this is a big one, trying to be perfect during the week. So whether it's too restrictive in terms of the food choices, how many calories you're eating, so like really attempting to be perfect, so to speak, and then blowing it out of the water on the weekends. And oftentimes it's just this like slingshot analogy where you are pulling so far back in the sense of restriction throughout the week that, and you know, what I see a lot with the women that I work with is it does work, you know, maybe Monday through Friday afternoon because they're busy at work, hustling the kids around. And that stress response can actually, in some cases, shut off hunger. So maybe you don't realize like how hungry, how restricted you are. And then when the stress starts to dissipate and you're like, okay, I have the weekend now to relax and unwind, like the hunger becomes more present. The cravings start to arise. You go into brain shutdown mode because you're exhausted. You want to relax, or, you know, my favorite, I deserve this. And I'm like, and that's another post that I've created is, you know, reframe or redefine what you are deserving of. So yes, I understand that, you know, being able to just shut your brain off and eat whatever you want feels enjoyable, feels like it's relieving your stress, but really it's getting you further away from your goal. So are you not deserving of getting the outcome that you are working so hard for, you know, during the week?
And I love that.
Yeah, it's very easy to like to undo all of that progress that you might have made in a couple of days.
And I think you had mentioned this in your post that if we remove the weekend, that essentially leaves like 74% of the week that is allowing us, assuming we're being very diligent and on point during Monday through Friday. And I think you mentioned that's not even including Friday evenings. So that right there is diminishing the amount of time that we have, or, you know, the capacity we have to make progress.
Exactly. Yeah. I think most people's weekends start on like late Friday afternoon, Friday evening, when they're going out with the family. And that's kind of when that first indulgent meal happens. And then, and I'm sure you have had this experience with your clients, it's that whole all or nothing mentality. Oops, I overdid it at this one meal. Well, weekend's here. Might as well keep going. I'll start again on Monday. So now you've really dug yourself into a deeper hole. And one of my favorite phrases to kind of help people out of that mindset is the best way to dig yourself out of the hole is to stop digging, right? Because now, and it's very logical in theory, but I know that we get emotional when it comes to our decisions. So if you think about it, all right, maybe at that meal, you went 300 to 500 calories over your deficit. Maybe you're even at maintenance. Maybe you're at a small surplus. No big deal. But if you get right back on track, you can easily make up for that, right? Or it's not going to do that much damage. However, if you say, I screwed up, all is lost, may as well keep going. And now you overdo it at every other meal. Well, again, now you put yourself in a surplus most likely. So yeah, you are going to either set yourself back or just keep yourself at maintenance. And now you're frustrated because I'm putting in so much work because Monday through, Friday feels like a lot of work. And then, you're not realizing what you're doing on the weekend and how much that does make a difference, unfortunately.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, Marcy, because I think a lot of that has to, or it goes back to what we've learned from diet culture, which is if you don't do it perfectly, you've messed up, screwed everything, and now you have to start all over again. Yep. And I am remembering another post that I read of yours that was talking about what we miss out on when we choose to crash diet instead of going the slower, more sustainable route. And I think, and I don't want to misquote you, but I'm pretty positive one of the things that you said was that we miss out on the skill that is learning how to make a not great, less than 100% compliant choice, whatever we eat 300 to 500 calories more than we wanted to, and then figure out how to just move on from that.
Yes, exactly. I think that was a post that I put up a couple of days ago, just because I know we are going into the new year and there are going to be many people who have that sense of urgency where I'm not where I want to be. I overdid it throughout the holidays. I feel like crap. I'm bloated. I had that just kind of hungover feeling in my body. And so, what do? They hop on the newest fad diet that is going to be, very restrictive. And does it get you some quick results? Sure. But it doesn't teach you the mindset, the habits, doesn't allow you to build the skills to make this a forever lifestyle. So yeah, unfortunately, the slow, sustainable way is always the right way.
And ends up being faster in the long run.
Exactly. Yes. Because you're not off and on, repeatedly.
I hear you. Yep. I'm right there with you preaching the same message.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about the last two.
Okay. So the next one would be that you are killing it in the gym, 5, 6, God forbid, 7 days per week. You're doing these really intense workouts and then you are sedentary the rest of the day. So we were talking about the walking pad earlier, and this is the reason I do it. I hate to say to earn my calories. It's not that, but knowing with my job, I could, and I've tracked it, I could get to 4 o'clock and have 2,000 steps if I am not intentional about my movement. I train very hard. So I'm in the gym 4 days per week, strength training with progressive overload, pushing my sets to failure. Right now I'm kind of in that zone 2 cardio mode, which is becoming more popular. So probably doing 3 to 4 days of cardio, but knowing that that does not burn that many calories, especially because I'm a small person and my body adapts to it over time. So I think a lot of people, one, they assume that they're more active than they are because they're putting in so much effort in the gym, or they get that feeling, right? I'm sweating, my heart rate's high, I feel exhausted at the end, not realizing that those workouts do not burn that many calories, or they're trusting what their watch says, what the number on the cardio machine says, which is a gross overestimate. And then maybe they're eating back those calories, but also assuming that that's going to be enough when really it's your non-exercise activity that burns the most. So going for the walks, doing chores around the house, parking farther away, fidgeting at your desk, whatever the case may be. So I think that being sedentary overall, getting 4,000, 5,000 steps, outside of your structured workouts and believing that's enough, and it's really not.
I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I think it's similar to why we repeatedly crash diet as opposed to learning how to eat well and creating healthy eating habits and trying to understand energy balance. That's harder, right? And it takes more effort more consistently. So our brains are like, ah, let me do Whole 30 again, or like, let me hop on this diet again, because I know what to expect, right? And it's just sort of like a quick Band-Aid rip off as opposed to the long haul. I think exercise is the same. So I'm not saying that going to the gym or working out is easy by any stretch of the imagination, but getting 3, 4, 5 workouts in a week is a lot easier, at least mentally, to swallow than thinking about staying active for most of my day, most days of the year.
Do you think that? Oh yeah, no, I totally understand that. The other thing that I will say, and I can fall into this trap as well, and today is a perfect example. Like, I wake up around 6:15 and I'm just like going. I do not hit snooze. So I immediately get out of bed, take a cold shower, meditate, go for a walk. You know, like I'm rolling, right? Like responding to client messages. I'm on a call for my other job and I can feel like I'm really busy. Or I am really busy. And I think a lot of people mistake being busy with being active because their brain is going. Even if you're shuttling kids back and forth, like that can feel, not that I have children, you would know better than me. But, you know, just that kind of stress response can feel like you're really busy, but you're not actually moving. So again, I can look at my watch midday and be like, oh my gosh, I only have a couple of thousand steps, but I feel like I've been going all day long. So that's just another thing to get aware about. And being active, it requires intention, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, that's kind of to your point too. And this is the harsh truth, is you can't go back to your old lifestyle unless you want the results of your old lifestyle back. So yeah, you can put in the effort with the workouts, with the nutrition, and lose the weight, get to your goal, but you also have to maintain that. And I know it can feel really overwhelming for people. Like, I'll never forget one of my clients. She is amazing. She's worked with me a couple of times. She's going to come back again in January for a fat loss phase. And after our first time working together, when we were wrapping things up, I had really gotten her into the habit of walking. And she wrote me and she said, you know, now that I'm at my goal, does this mean that I'm going to have to keep walking to the end of the earth for the rest of my life? You know, because she was like feeling like, yes, 10,000, 12,000 steps feels like so much. And I was like, well, yeah, you kind of do, you know? And it's funny because now she loves it. Like, she got a walking pad before me, and she's one of the ones who's always commenting on my walking posts with how much she loves it. So I think it becomes one of those situations where you need to make it your new identity, you know?
Yeah. And recognize that if you want to sustain your progress, you often have to sustain the behaviors that got you that progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I had one more. There were like two more, but this is probably the biggest one, is the bites, licks, and tastes. So kind of going back to what we were saying about the healthy food and not realizing how calorie dense that can be, thinking that those bites, licks, and tastes that sneak in, that those calories don't count either. And what are we bite, licking, tasting? Like, probably not raw carrot sticks. You know, it's going to be more, oh, the bite of the sandwich that was on my kid's plate, or the goldfish crackers, or licking the peanut butter off the spoon, a handful of nuts here and there, like a Hershey kiss at the office. Very seemingly small, you know, amounts of food, but also they can be very calorie dense. And if you do the math over the course of the day, it can add up to a couple hundred calories. So again, that puts you at maintenance.
Yes. I just had a client. So we were talking about how potentially her bites, licks, and tastes could be kind of serving as a barrier to her progress. So we just decided, she's not tracking in an app, but we just decided to raise awareness around this kind of like inter-meal snacking by just having her write down every time she chose something that just felt like a nibble. Didn't feel like a meal. It wasn't a purposeful snack or anything. It just was a nibble. And she was astonished. Now, she has two littles. She also is the one who organizes meals most of the time in her house. So she said, almost always it was when she was either serving her children or serving the family. And she would just decide like, oh, hey, I'm giving this to, I'll just take a little bite here, or like I'm cutting this and there's an extra piece of this, so I'll just take a little nibble there. And she was like, I couldn't believe how often that added up throughout the course of the day.
Yeah. And going back to what I was saying earlier, those little nibbles, like they're not filling. So you don't notice physically how much you're taking in. So I think that's one issue. It's like, okay, you're not getting full from it. So it's almost like you're thinking that it doesn't count. And then also just because so many women are very busy, they're overwhelmed, they're stressed. So it's like almost a subconscious thing, or they're doing it on autopilot, not really realizing what's happening. And then they don't remember at the end of the day. Like sometimes I don't remember what I ate for breakfast, right? Like how am I going to remember like all those little bites, looks and tastes too? So that is an issue for sure. And, you know, a funny example of this, not with one of my own clients, but I am a member of Jordan Lipp's group training program. And, you know, he has great content and he put out a post, gosh, probably a couple months ago about a client of his who was supposedly in maintenance, right? They were no longer in a fat loss phase. They were just working together to help her maintain her progress. And she starts losing weight. She's like, I don't understand. Like, I'm supposed to be at maintenance calories. Like, how come I'm losing weight? What they came to realize after doing some deeper digging, creating that awareness, she got Invisalign. And with Invisalign, you have like anytime you drink, anytime you eat, you have to take those trays out. Well, she had been, prior to the Invisalign, eating a large box of Tic Tacs every single day. That was like 400 calories. So now gets the Invisalign, isn't eating the Tic Tacs, like just created this calorie deficit for her.
Wow.
So, isn't that crazy?
I believe in the power of Invisalign because I'm a braces kid and remember like the retainers, and it's so annoying to have to take them out. And yet it also probably curbs all of the intermeal snacking. I get that.
And again, it's like it makes you pause and ask yourself like, okay, do I really need this? Yeah, because it's kind of a pain in the butt to take those. I haven't had it, but I can imagine that it's a hassle to have to remove them every single time you put something in your mouth.
They're slobbery. You don't want to have to just put them on the table if you're eating with other people. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, I did go a couple of years ago to have a consult because I would like to have Invisalign in my bottom teeth because I lost my retainers. Sorry, mom, to waste all that money. And I needed like all of this work before the Invisalign. It was like $2,000 of work. I'm like, oh, that just feels like so much. So I'm going to put the Invisalign on hold for
now. There you go. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But anyway, good stuff.
So Marcy, final question. We've talked about things that can kind of stand in your way of creating fat loss, even when it feels like you're doing all the right things. And we are coming up on a new calendar year, which generally comes with a lot of extrinsic motivation surrounding body composition change. So if there is someone listening who would like to create sustainable fat loss in the new year, what one piece of advice would you give them in order that they might be the most successful?
Oh gosh, so many pieces of advice, but I really have to go back to, nutrition is going to be the biggest driver. So I would say if you have never tracked your food, spend a month, spend all of January, just give yourself that challenge of using a tracking app like MyFitnessPal, something like that, getting a food scale, weighing everything, and just to create that awareness, not to make you obsessive or neurotic, but it's going to really be an eye-opener for what your current habits are like, where excess calories are sneaking in that you might not be aware of, and then making the changes based off that.
I love that. And if they want more than just one tip, that was a great one. But if they want more than that, where can listeners find you and connect with you online? Because your Instagram page is a wealth of knowledge.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I appreciate it. So Marcy Nevin, just my name, is my Instagram handle. And that is definitely where I put out all of my content. I'm not on Facebook. I do have an email list that I've been trying to be more consistent with. My podcast is no longer, unfortunately. But yeah, Instagram is the place to find me.
I'll drop your handle in the show notes below so everybody can just click and follow you like I have been for the last several years. And every time one of your posts comes up, I'm like, oh, this is so good. I need to save it. Aww. So I can really reread and absorb later. So I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. It was great to connect with you, Nicole, and I hope you have a great holiday season and a very happy new year.
The same to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.